Mourinho is gone. Hello and welcome to episode 20, yes 20, of the Real Football Cast. I'm your host Dan Tracy, and in the next 60 minutes we will be dissecting all the hot topics in football. As per usual, we will be discussing what's been going on in the Premier League over the past few days. But in addition to that, there also are some off-pitch activities that have caught our eye, some big ones, and they'll be getting our attention in the next hour. Joining me tonight is the return of my trusted strike force from a few weeks ago. First up is the return of my good friend Cole. Cole, it's a pleasure to have you back on the Real Football Cast. How have you been, my friend?
Yeah, really good, Dan, and good to be back, mate, chatting and all things football.
Excellent. That same gratitude also goes to Matthew, our resident Fulham fan, who I believe now got his hat-trick ball for the season. Matthew, how have you been keeping?
It's not been grand, I'll admit. My outlook on life more or less follows the ebb and flow of following Fulham, so it's been a little bit down. I had a bit of a brief positivity a couple of weeks ago when we beat Southampton, but it's all starting to come all the way back down again.
Oh dear. Well, let's hope I can cheer you up for the next like 60 minutes or so. I mean, at least sort of take the edge off that mood slightly. Before we do that, I'll do some social media bits first. Otherwise, we'll be talking into the abyss once more. First, if you want to get in touch with me, you can. That's on Twitter, @DanTracy1983. Anything show-related, please send it my way. You can find me, of course, via iTunes by searching for Real Football Cast. And if you use that platform, then don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if you're not a fan of all things Apple, then you can, of course, find me on SoundCloud and Acast. While the easiest way to find all the links is by going to realfootballcast.com. As you should know by now, the Real Football Cast is sponsored by Loserpool. What is Loserpool, I hear you ask? It's not a new game, it's been going for quite a bit now, so it's a game that sees betting turned on its head, with a focus being on the loser. If this has grabbed your interest, then be sure to visit loserpool.com and create an account, especially as there is a new prize pool which guarantees the winner £1,000, something you will not want to miss out on. Like I say every week, the odds of winning are great, but they're even better if you sign up. Right then, it's time to go live. And I guess there's only really one place to go. I would say Old Trafford, but actually, Mourinho doesn't work there anymore. Because Matthew, I guess it's been coming, but a £24 million payoff will soften the blow somewhat, especially just before Christmas, won't it?
Yeah, you said it's been coming. I think that's really the sort of big surprise over this has been the timing of it. The fact that it was today of all days, Tuesday, you'd have figured it would have been something that would have been handled, you know, maybe the day after they, you know, when they get back from Liverpool, he gets fired on the Sunday night and then the news sort of gets released on the Monday at 9 o'clock sort of thing. You can sort of figure that out. But it's the fact that it's come on the Tuesday, it's come today, it's just taken everyone a wee bit by surprise. But sort of on an overall, I'm sort of surprised that he's gone. I expected him to at least be given till the end of the season, what with, you know, Champions League and FA Cup still up for grabs. There's still the chance for him to win a trophy. So the fact that he's gone now is a bit of a surprise, but on an overall, I think everyone sort of knew that it was going to be his last season anyway. So I think they're just trying to get ahead of the curve, as it were, in trying to appoint whatever the new manager is coming ahead before the names of Zidane has been brought up, Pochettino, I don't believe, Simeone, I don't believe, but all the managers that names are going to get that are going to be out there, they're basically just trying to get a jump on everyone over it.
What do you put the change in mindset down to? Because then you've just said that you didn't really expect it to come, especially at the time you've had it in that week. You know, like you say, you could have been really dramatic and gone straight after the United games on Sunday. The dust could have settled slightly maybe yesterday. So at what point do they go, right, it's Tuesday, something's got to change? As a word's been put in the ear of the hierarchy from, say, even Sir Alex Ferguson, and thought, you know, from an outsider looking in, or someone who's got such a strong link to the club, like, something has to change. Is it something in the background, or what do you put it down to?
It could be any number of things. No one knows 100% of what goes on in the back rooms, in the back offices of football clubs, apart from the people that are running the football club. My only thought is, and I mentioned the fact that they're in the Champions League, is that they saw PSG on the horizon and thought, nah, he's not getting us through that. That's one avenue. That's our biggest sort of trophy out the window. We may as well get the jump on it now. It's my own. We're not going to get through with him. Our best chance is probably going to get, of getting through, is probably going to get, like a Zidane or a Pochettino or a Simeone or anyone like that. They're going to be able to get us through. This guy isn't. That's my sort of only thought. I honestly don't think Sir Alex Ferguson would have had that much of a say in it. I think he's very much just sort of, you know, ambassadorial role now. I don't think he had, you know, the way that he more or less handpicked David Moyes to be his replacement, I don't think he's had that much of a say on any sort of matters ever since, because there's no way he would have given Van Gaal the job, for instance. So I don't think this is Fergie's call at all.
Okay, that's a very good point you raised. Cole, it seems like they're going to be naming a caretaker manager for the caretaker manager. So Michael Carrick's going to be in charge for, I guess, 48 hours. I've read God knows how many names today, but the hottest tip as of, say, 8 o'clock tonight is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So can he do anything to revive, I guess, what has been a shipwreck of a season so far?
I guess the only thing, Ben, isn't it now, is that anyone going in there, it just has to try and win over the key players now. And hopefully if you get those key players like Pogba on your side and you suddenly, you know, sell to him that you're going to build a team around him, there's still enough talent at the club that could basically, you know, if they get on a run and they build some momentum, there's still enough talent in that United side that means they could go on and finish the season decently and possibly win a trophy. So you're not going into, you know, this is not a Big Sam situation where you're walking into a club that you kind of already know you're doomed. This is a club with massive potential and what a chance to try and sell yourself. The names being mentioned, you know, it's real hit and miss, isn't it? You know, you'd think someone like Zidane may be a real prime candidate, but he might look long term. You know, it was quite funny watching Sky Sports News this morning when this broke, and you had a guy on the phone to Gary Neville trying to just relay the message that, hold on a minute, Michael Carrick's been put in charge for 2 days, and then after 2 days, they're going to name a new manager. And I think Gary Neville found it quite amusing. It was like, you know, why do you feel the need to tell us Carrick's going to be in charge for 2 days? You know, just say there's a caretaker until we find someone new this week. I don't think any of us really can have a clue who's going to end up there, to be honest. You'd think they'll try to pick a name, because obviously United still wants some form of reputation and good manager to go in. You know, I did see it, you know, I think Paul Lintz has come out today and said that he thinks the real two men who know the club inside out are Steve Bruce and Mark Hughes, and I had to chuckle at those names being put forward, because especially with Hughes's record lately, I don't see United suddenly thinking this could be the man that turns our season around. Because they'll still want someone who can come in and have that reputation, it gets the squad excited and gets them wanting to play and try and win things. So I see a bigger name than that, Hiddink maybe, till the end of the season. And then, you know, during that process, we know they're going to be scouting out the future long-term manager.
Well, this leads me on to my next question, Cole, and it's, I guess, one I have to ask, especially with us being Spurs fans. Pochettino is already being linked at large. You know, it's something that's already sort of surfaced repeatedly, so this is almost like the prime bit of rumour, isn't it? So we've answered this question in many different ways, many different times, but as of right now, is he going to look at that job and just think, it's a poison chalice, it's one I don't really want? And always, and I guess almost, should I say, that he's going to be in real demand this summer, because you take into account that United are going to be looking for a long-term manager. Santiago Solari is doing his best, I guess, Tim Sherwood impression at the Bernabeu, and that job is probably going to be more than likely vacant as well. So it's, you know, it's hard to sort of say that everything's going to stay the same at Tottenham, but, I mean, will he have reason to have his head turned, or are things still going in the right direction for Spurs? What's your take on all things Poch and where he might end up in, say, I don't know, 3 to 6 months' time?
I think we've always known, haven't we, Dan, that at some point, you know, we've got this great manager who's performing miracles on what is basically, you know, a mid-table budget. And we've kind of always known that, you know, the performances and his style of management, you know, the way he holds himself around the football, he's an attractive proposition for any side now. So all the big sides, I think, if they're looking to replace their manager in the summer, he will be, you know, if he isn't top of the list, he'll be a very close second. Because I think the one thing that, you know, appeals with someone like Poch, and this is probably what could appeal to Man United if they want to get their house in order, is that there is a guy you can potentially look to build a long-term future of a club around. You know, he doesn't want to go there, you know, he won't go somewhere looking for short term and just want to have an impact for one or two seasons. You know, we've seen that he likes to bring through youth players, and he is all about building a team environment, you know, not a superstar environment. People seem to get offended. Lots of Spurs fans seem to get offended when Poch is linked to these jobs, but the reality is there's only so long that Poch may sit around at Spurs thinking, well, there's only so much I can do sometimes with the resources I've got. You know, we have got the new stadium coming on and we have got a great young side. But at the same time, there will be a certain point where if you've got aspirations as a football manager, you want to manage one of those top sides. And given, you know, given Poch is from a Latino background, teams like Barcelona and Real Madrid are the sort of clubs that they want to manage at some point because it's in their blood. So he will get his head turned. For us, I just think we have to hope that maybe by the time that happens, we've managed to stick a trophy on the sideboard, and you know, Poch can see that there is a long-term future, but that may also rely upon, you know, assurances given from the board to say that they will help him and back him and actually give him possibly the squad that can go on and compete, you know, on multiple fronts. But he's going to be in demand. So I think for us, Dan, it's a kind of, you know, we know he's not going to go now. So I think we're safe till the end of the season. But I'll be honest with you, I will not be sitting pretty once that final ball's been kicked and the whistle goes, because you never know in football. And let's face it, those clubs are such big clubs that quite rightfully most people could have their heads turned at the options and money and stuff they'll have thrown at them by those clubs.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You look at sort of people are sort of quoting astronomical figures about the fact that Pochettino's going to have to be bought out of his contract, and they're saying sort of 34 million, 40 million. But for a club like Real Madrid or Man United, they won't qualm at paying that if it means getting their man. So the fact that Tottenham obviously still looking for that trophy that eludes them, and it almost that second half of the season takes on such extra importance, because now they really do need to win a trophy if they do really want to keep their manager long term. And I think Levy has to be true to his word that she wasn't necessarily true to at the end of last season about, you know, really backing the manager and things like that. So it's going to be, or, you know, we always have been saying for the last, I don't know, 3-4 years that it's going to be a pivotal season or a pivotal summer for Tottenham. I think this one
might
really...
well then. Yeah, and I think as well, you know, people have been, I've seen, you know, tweets and that today saying that why would he swap the sort of players he's got at Tottenham? But I think we also have to remember that come the end of the season, you know, if we've had a trophy this season again, and, you know, at the moment it's looking good, but if we were to miss out on the top four, if Poch went somewhere like Madrid, the likelihood would be some of those players would be open to following him.
That's right.
Because they clearly love him. So, you know, someone like Harry Kane, again, you know, at some point he may make the move, like Baldy. And what better than to go when the bloke who you've built up this great relationship with for a long while is at the new club that you fancy going to? So Poch will have those guys and could possibly prize two or three of them away. And then, you know, then things are not looking so rosy for us, are they? So, yeah, this summer will be a real, you know, real tense one, I think.
Absolutely.
I honestly don't think Spurs fans have anything to worry about. If you look at it on sort of the current landscape, why on earth would you leave Tottenham at this stage? You know, yes, a couple of years ago, Manchester United would have been seen as the great thing and the be all and end all and the biggest club in the world. But if you look at how things are sort of being run right now, why on earth would you want to leave Spurs? You're moving into, eventually, we hope, at some stage of this century, moving into the new stadium, which, by everything we've seen on social media and the previews, look as if it may just be the greatest stadium that the world has ever given us. You know, well worth the wait. If you look at the players that he's got to deal with, he doesn't have to deal with the level of egos of the likes of Romelu Lukaku and Paul Pogba the main one. He doesn't have to deal with all the social media nonsense that goes on with Jesse Lingard. And I think it is nonsense. I think some his social media play and social media awareness is slightly off. You don't have that problem with Spurs. Why on earth would you leave? And you mentioned earlier it's something that Pochettino believes in, building a club and building a team and bringing through the youth. What is there that Man United offer that you don't really already have with Spurs? I think
the only restriction that we may have that could tempt someone like Poch in the end is resources. And that Levy is renowned for, not particularly splashing out sometimes on the resources that are needed, if you like, to push the team over the line. And I just wonder if at some point someone like Poch may feel, well, listen, I'm doing as much for you as I possibly can, and there's only so much, I can wring out of these players before at some point I do also need someone who's going to back me and give me a little bit of help. And that is the only thing I feel that may cost us, is if he suddenly gets to a point where he just thinks, I've done enough and there is only so much I can do by bringing through young players. I do need a board or chairman who is prepared to back me with a couple of big signings here and there to help me get things over the line. And that's possibly the only thing I can see where the attraction is, that he may just get to a point at some point where he says, I think I've done enough here. And for me as a manager, I want to finish my career saying I won this, won that, won this and won that. And am I going to do it here if I'm not going to be given sometimes the right tools I need to get it done? And that's my only fear. That's the only attraction I see other clubs having right now over Spurs.
Yeah, and I don't want to turn this into a Pochettino. So this isn't meant to be a Mourinho thing. So I'll just ask this sort of one quote. You mentioned about Daniel Levy not being the best at giving out the funds, as it were. You're like more likely to know this more than I would. But what is this sort of outlook going to be looking like in terms of how much more money the stadium is going to generate? Maybe that's the reason he's sort of been holding back in recent years, is because he knows, give it a couple of while, and then I'm going to get the new stadium come in with bigger attendance, better hospitality. You're going to get some money because the NFL game is going to be played there. Is it going to be waiting for that money to come through before he starts releasing it? Am I sort of off the mark here?
No, I think that's right. I guess the only problem is now with players and managers, it's a short career, isn't it? So the kind of, with some of the players like Ali and Kane, the few of like, well, if you just give us another 3 or so years when this money starts rolling in, then we'll be able to compete. To them, it's like, that means I'm missing out on 3 or 4 years of big money, possibly trophies. And will players sit around that long now, or do they, will some one of those players want success now? They'll feel, I've done enough, I now can go where I can get instant success, a bit like Kyle Walker. And then that's where the attraction is of, like, I get double my money elsewhere and I also win things. The ideal would be that you think a few of them say, no, there's a real project going on here. But I think we know now modern day players sometimes don't necessarily think like that. Kane may be the only one who I really think may go, well, I see a bit more longer term, a bit like Steven Gerrard type player. The others, I'm not so sure. But I hope you're right. I really do hope you're right.
I think really football's all about timing, isn't it? Because sometimes opportunities land in your lap and a footballer has to weigh up, I'm ever going to get this again, because, form can drop dramatically. You could get injured. That move may never materialise. So if Poch does go and then he comes waving a bag of money as a Madrid or United manager, then it might be very hard for someone like Dele Alli, Christian Eriksen, to sort of turn down that kind of move. And from Poch himself, does he want to be known as a manager that just is great at bringing on young players, or does he want to be known as a manager that wins trophies? And I think the answer is the latter there, isn't it, really? He doesn't just want to be someone who has cultivated a great crop of players, but then is almost the nearly man, or, the team that nearly did stuff and entertained people but didn't win trophies. He's got a burning desire to be, one of, if not the best managers in world football. He's not quite there yet, and that comes with winning trophies. So, like you sort of said, Carl, it's going to be a really, really horrible summer. And I don't think we're going to enjoy it until
the start. No, I'm not looking forward to it, mate.
Absolutely not. But let's move on, because we could dwell on this for quite a while. But, Matthew, whoever the man that takes over United in the interim, One of his first tasks will be working out how to get the better of PSG. Now, could that man become something of a Roberto Di Matteo figure like at Chelsea back in 2012 and somehow galvanise the team to win the competition itself?
That's a hell of a lot of galvanising to get the team from the state they're in now to what they're, because Chelsea were in a much better position back in 2012, 11, whenever they sacked Vias Boas. I lose track of exactly when they got rid of him. That is going to be the big thing, because it is really now Manchester United's best chance of getting back into the Champions League for next year, because I think the top four is done for them. I'm just like, 11 points, we can just rule them out for now. And we've gone through, Man United have gone through periods in the past where they've been out of the Champions League and they've sort of financially budgeted for they can survive 1-2 years out of the Champions League before it starts hitting them majorly. And obviously they don't want to be just the Champions League for the money side of it. There's also the prestige and the chance of winning the Champions League. So I think, as I said, the person who galvanizes them, that's a hell of a job. I don't think they are going to be able to do it. I think the person that is going to sort of kick them on another stage, it won't be whoever the interim manager is until the end of the season. I've seen a lot of talk about Ryan Giggs, seeing as I think Wales have only got the one game in March, that breaks up the schedule, which as a watcher I wouldn't be totally against. I think Giggs still needs to get some coaching under his belt, because I think he's still a little bit raw in that sense. But let's talk about Ole Solskjaer. I think that is the way that they need to go for this interim manager, is get someone who gets the club. I mentioned about galvanizing. The only player who would be Roy Keane. If there's one person you want in that dugout that's going to actually sort these players out and get... I know people say it's a joke, but there is some level of seriousness to it. If you get someone like Roy Keane to actually sit the players down and say, right, this is Manchester United, stop your what Roy Keane does. No, stop your dabbing, stop your posting on social media, all that thing. Even if you want to get Gary Neville, because he's somewhat on that same level of thing. That's what you really need in the short term, just a short, sharp shug, just a sort of a wake-up call, if you were. Then in the summer, when you appoint the next manager, maybe then have the culture change. But just for now, they really do need, the whole team needs that real big kick up the backside, just not to spur them on, but to sort them out, at least.
I tell you what, if Roy Keane was named interim manager, that would be one hell of a combustible atmosphere between him and Paul Pogba, wouldn't it, Cole?
I'd actually pay money to just go to the training ground every day, Dan, to be honest. Because I tell you now, Roy Keane going in there, I can imagine the first day, right, you, and you, you're all this, that, and that. Oh, he would really set the tone nicely to begin with. But I do understand the point there that's being made, I think maybe had Gary Neville not gone to Valencia, he would have been a prime candidate. But yeah. I think that little stint there has maybe tarnished his reputation. But I certainly understand the point there that he's making sure, these players understand. I just don't know whether today's modern footballers actually buy into all of that kind of thing. Like as we're saying, I think most modern footballers now are just more concerned about their social media presence, and I'm not even sure if one of these, a Keane or Gary Neville, going in and saying, right, hold on a minute, this has to stop, that has to stop, you've not achieved nothing, so you shouldn't be on social media. I just think players nowadays wouldn't even bat an eyelid to any of that. It's a real shame, but I don't see anyone like Jesse Lingard or Paul Pogba being worried, because they'd probably just turn around and say, listen, my social media is one of the main things I'm concerned about. So it's really strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost as if player power's gone too far, and the sort of, I guess, the repercussions aren't really going to be felt that much. And, they're earning, let's say, 150, 200 grand a week. That's not going to stop. So it's just water for ducks back, really. And I guess that's the short-termism of managers and the whole nature of hiring and firing, really. But, I think
you either need, don't you? You need a board that either make it clear to the players that, listen, this is the man we're backing, and if you're not on board, you'll be out the door. Let's look at the Pogba situation for Jose. Now, if Jose clearly turned around and said to the United board, listen, this guy ain't for me, I don't want him around the squad, if the United board suddenly said, right, we'll get rid of him then, now that sends a message to the rest of the squad, doesn't it? That's like, listen, we're backing this bloke, and if you're not on board, you go. Simple as that, because we want a team effort rather than an individual. But getting rid of players like that nowadays, clubs don't seem so keen to get rid of some of those high-profile players. But I would say I think United need to look a lot more than just at Jose. You know, I don't think the club's being run as well off the pitch as it should be. And there might be people there that need to be got rid of as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of lame ducks that could do with a clearing out. And whether that comes in the summer with a new man actually coming in and saying, right, root and branch, it's got to change. Because I think the mentality of the club's just been stagnant. It's been completely stale since Fergie's left. That's now what, Moyes, Van Gaal, Mourinho, they've all failed. I know Fergie would have set an incredible bar to sort of match, but no one's coming even close to it. And it's, you know, just this sort of decline. They're a powerhouse in terms of financial institution. They're great at getting deals for noodle companies. But when it comes to actually, you know, getting results, it's just it's going south, isn't it? So, you know, let's see what they can do over the next few months. It'll be interesting, and it's not going to be the last we sort of hear about that. But if we talk about the Champions League and the draw itself, Cole, there's very much a Bundesliga versus Premier League flavour to it, with no less than three pairings of that nature. So, for you, how many of each competition will get to the quarterfinals, and more importantly, who? So, are we looking at a German whitewash, an English whitewash, or somewhere in between?
I to be honest with you, Dan, I think I see us Spurs just edging Dortmund in a tight game. You know, Dortmund have come a long way lately, and you know they're a good young side. But I actually think we will see those off. I think City will see off their opponents. So you know, City are one of the favourites to win it. So I don't see them having any trouble. And then after that, yeah, the Bayern game, that's going to be really interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, Bayern have got that history. So that one, I think, could go either way. But I'd still fancy the English, you know, our English sides to come through, to be honest with you, mate. I think this could be one of those years where we end up having either an all-English quarter-final or semi-final at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's all sort of cyclical, isn't it? Like, the team that dominates, we've had, like, an English spell around sort of, I don't know, the start of the decade, that kind of period, like the 2000s, and then it's gone Spanish, and it could be the sort of the changing of the guard, really. So, Matthew, if we look at Liverpool, they'll be confident of getting the better of Bayern Munich, because it's fair to say that they're now a team that's going through a transition under their new manager, Niko Kovac, and also Father Time is finally getting the better of the likes of Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery. So, they're there for the taking almost, aren't they, Bayern? I mean, you shouldn't rule them out, but they're not quite the powerhouse that they were a few months ago.
You took the words exactly right out of my mouth. I was just about to say, I think, you know, we talked about an English whitewash. I think it's going to be an English whitewash when it comes to against the Bundesliga teams. The biggest name of it will be Bayern Munich, but they are not the force that they once were. You talk about them, you know, basically every single point that you made was the point that I was about to make.
Sorry, mate.
You mentioned that, it's okay. The likes of Frank Ribéry and Arjen Robben are getting on. The fact that it's Niko Kovac's first year in charge. Manuel Neuer seems to have gone completely out of. I'm not seeing as many Twitter and YouTube highlights from him as I have been in recent seasons. Whether or not that whole playing in midfield for Germany in the World Cup thing just completely ruined him as a goalkeeper, I don't know. Yeah, Liverpool were absolutely fantastic. The only thing about Liverpool is the fact that the second leg is in the Allianz, and we always romanticise, and there is some level to it, as they proved against Napoli, those big European nights at Anfield. If Bayern Munich somehow managed to shut up shop and keep it to like a 1-0 or even worse for them, a 2-1, and then sort of have the somewhat advantage going into the second leg, that's when I think you're going to be sort of a little bit nervous. Had it been the other way round and Liverpool had the second leg at Anfield, huge difference. But I think that the fact that the second game is at the Allianz Arena, just, you know, Liverpool are still going to go through, but it's just going to make that a little bit harder for them.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point you make actually about the way the tie sort of set up. So I think that's the one that's closest in the balance, but they're all going to be sort of great ties. I mean, City should have the easier lie of the land against Schalke, but the Champions League's warming up now. You get through the group stage, which, although, to be fair for Spurs, was quite exciting. But usually it's the same kind of rigmarole, isn't it? You sort of just wading through water to get to this sort of stage, but the ties we've been given look very appealing. But if we go back to domestic matters now, we'll stay with Liverpool though, Cole. They're top of the table still after beating Man United, and Shaqiri was undoubtedly the hero after coming off the bench and scoring not one but two deflected goals. Shouldn't take away the quality of the goals themselves, they're still quite good and they were very important. But that signing just shows just how much that Liverpool have their locker at the moment, and also how important squad depth is going to be over the next few months.
Yeah, it was key, wasn't it, Dan? I mean, you know, I think someone like Shaqiri would have been ideal for us in the summer, you know, at the price he went for. And that's the sort of player that it's great to have in your squad, because, you know, he will have, you know, there will be days where he frustrates you and maybe it's not happening for him. But then there'll be games where he'll come on and he'll have a run of three or four games where he puts in real good performances and wins you games. And that can be the difference between having a player like that in your squad could bring you the title, possibly, because those 6 or so points you might have dropped by not having the resources to come off the bench, suddenly when you've got them, they win you the games that win you the title. So it was a real good buy. You know, I don't think, yeah, he's not going to be one of their first names on the team sheet, I don't think, for Klopp. But what a player to be able to have to come off the bench for you. And that is what I think the top sides are really aiming to do, aren't they? You know, you just want an 11 and then possibly 3 or 4 that you can bring off the bench that just push you over the line in a tight game. And he settled in really well there by looks of it, Shaqiri, you know. And Liverpool have done what they needed to do. You know, they addressed their weak areas in the summer. They've now got what looks like a real decent squad. And we're seeing the rewards for that on the pitch, you know. I still have my doubts whether they can get it over the line past City. I guess we just have to wait to see how Liverpool respond to, say, maybe a couple of not-so-favourable results. You know, if they lose one, how do they respond to that defeat? You know, if they become the sort of side that lose one but then bounce back with 3 or 4 wins on the spin, that they'd be closer to Man City at the end than I think we believe they will be. I just worry that potentially City will still have too much in their locker for anyone at the moment, and they'll still win the league. But Liverpool will push them close, and then it will be interesting to see what they do in the summer again with transfers, because if they keep strengthening the way they are, then there will be two real good solid teams that can fight for the title. Because I also believe Liverpool are not scared of City. I think Liverpool are the one team that don't fear playing Man City. You know, everyone else kind of sits there and thinks, oh, City this week, you know, oh, likely it is we won't get nothing. Well, I actually believe Liverpool go into that game thinking, we'll beat these, we've got these. And that could be key when those two meet.
Yeah, I mean, they meet, what, January 3rd. That's going to be an absolutely huge clash. It might not define the season, because there's probably still time for twists and turns thereafter. But, poof, you know, what a way to bring in the new year, because that is going to be an absolute cracker. But, Matthew, last season, you would have got the feeling that at 1-0, Liverpool would have probably made a sub to hold on and just think, OK, a point's fine. But that mindset is obviously changed. I guess they cannot afford to have that one now, because, you know, a point won't do when Man City are on their coattails. So how has this sort of change in mentality manifested for you? I mean, what's the key difference for Liverpool at the moment?
I think the fact that they decided to go for the 2 points rather than hold on for one, you know, as you mentioned, A, would have been the fact that they're, you know, try to go toe for toe with Manchester City, and B, I think, I don't want to touch too much on it, but the fact they were playing Manchester United and the state that Manchester United are in, if that had been Arsenal, say, who have shown themselves to be pretty good this season, or had it been Spurs, who have shown themselves to be pretty good this season, I don't think Jurgen Klopp would have pulled off the same move. I think it's only because of the opponent that he decided, right, we're in a position here, we can do this. But Just going back and touching on Shaqiri. How long until he gets himself a place in the starting lineup? Because I do not understand how. Yes, he was a bargain. You know, you don't have to justify the fee by paying him every week because he wasn't that big of a signing. But surely he's someone of a player that you feel, right, surely we can get him from the start now and, you know, have that kind of impact and that sort of type, the way that he plays, you know, from the first whistle.
It's a good point, actually. There's probably still a question mark over his fitness. I don't know about you, Cole, but he reminds me a bit of Van der Vaart. They sort of probably give you a good 60 minutes to start with, or you could sort of be more of an impact sub like we saw on Sundays. Just, you don't really sort of see him playing a full 90 because I think, you know, I think he's certainly got fitter since he left Stoke, but there's still maybe a small question mark over where he could do it for a full 90. Is that a fair statement to make, Cole?
Yeah, I think obviously that's fair. And I guess there's one of those key things, isn't it? He was the same at Stoke, where he was a little bit inconsistent, where he could go on a run of two or three games where he was brilliant and you kind of started thinking, you know, this guy's worth looking at. But then suddenly you wouldn't hear from him again for the next five games. And then, like as you say, I think that's what's maybe put a few people off, is that he's, you know, yeah, this bloke may only be able to give you 65, 70 minutes from the start. And then sometimes, you know, he's great when he's great, but when he isn't, you're kind of carrying a player and almost playing with 10 men. So I think if he could start becoming really consistent, then there's no reason why he couldn't force himself into that starting lineup. I just think he was brought there for the purpose of being an impact player who starts in the games when maybe they're playing, you know, a lesser side at home, or he's one of those players that they bring off the bench. You know, I just think Klopp probably has got his set 11, or his best, what he thinks is his best 11, and Shaqiri will just come into that when he needs to rest one of those. But any time Klopp wants to play his best 11, Shaqiri will start on the bench. But That doesn't mean to say if he puts a run of performances in, then he may give Klopp a headache where he has to start at some point, and then it's just about the consistency from there.
Well, that's right. If you do those kind of performances that he did on Sunday, you're knocking on the door, you're asking those questions, then sooner rather than later you will be given an opportunity, and then once you're given that opportunity, it's how you deal with it thereafter. Take Heung-min Song at Tottenham, you know, at points he was sort of knocking on the door, coming in, doing a job, and then bit by bit it's almost sort of, he's never quite the first name on the team sheet, but he's up there and he's a real strong option now. So maybe it's still time for sort of him, Shaqiri, shall I say, for him to sort of bed in and just, you know, like I say, keep asking the questions. Performances like that, then you're going to be a real valuable asset, especially in the second half of the season. And Matthew, I tell you, who else may be valuable assets are the midfield pair of Fabinho and Naby Keita, because they're finally starting to settle in. Because especially Fabinho, there was a point of like, why on earth have Liverpool bought him? Because they're not doing anything with him. But now you're sort of starting to see the benefits of both of them now, aren't they? Liverpool's looking even stronger in that midfield three.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned options. It's the fact that they've it was something that we didn't really see from them much last year. Was the fact they had options, or they didn't have that many options off the bench. You know, we saw times Jurgen Klopp having to stick academy players there. So it's obviously something they obviously addressed and what, you know, wanted to address and then did address in the summer, the fact that they didn't have much strength and depth. And I suppose really it's a good thing to have, because you've got the likes of Keita and Fabinho in as options there. It gives you the chance of rotating, and also it's a bonus, so to speak. It's an improvement on what they had, because it was Henderson and Milner every week. And you know, I do love James Milner, but there is a somewhat level to level to his skill set. So the fact that you're adding to that with the likes of Keita and Fabinho, you know, they obviously said, right, we need something to properly go at Man City this year. These are the guys we need to do it. And it's, you know, proving off as they are, what is it, 2 points clear? No, 1 point, sorry. Clear at the top of the table. So obviously their strategy in the summer has worked for them.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's move on, because we've got still so much to cover and not much time. So, Matthew, I'll stay with you. We've focused on the league leaders, but unfortunately now we're going to have to focus on the team at the bottom, and that is your beloved Fulham. So it was a bright start for Ranieri after winning that, I guess, was a six-pointer against Southampton. But if there was a new manager bounce, it's been a very short-lived one, because it's just 1 point in the following four games. So how important is a good Christmas period going to be for Fulham?
Vital, because, you know, I've discussed on the Fulham podcast that I do, Fulham Focus, that basically how we deal with this next three games, Newcastle away on Saturday, Wolves at home, and then Huddersfield at home, basically defines not only our season but our long-term future as well. Because say we come out of that period with 0 points or 1 point or 2 points, and you know, we go into January 1st and we think, right, we're down already, now we need to start looking at players for the Championship, do we then start a sort of fire sale a la Leeds back in sort of 2002-2003 and say, we're going down, we may as well face the inevitable, so who can we get money for? Sessegnon, you know, 30-40 million, off you go. Tom Kearney, 20 million, off you go. Mitrovic, 15 million, he's been touted at Everton, off you go. You know, that's sort of 50-60 million right there. That's already, you know, you can build a team for that in the Championship. I don't want to be getting sort of too ahead of myself, but there is a real danger that, you know, we do have this, you know, three games, all of them 6-pointers, so I don't know what the maths is there. 18-pointers over
lots of points over,
exactly, over the Christmas period. And yeah, but if we do come out of that, you know, Newcastle away has sort of been a good hunting ground. I was trying to think what the opposite of a bogey ground is, because Newcastle, we are Newcastle's bogey team somewhat. So if we can get a decent result out of there, maybe then again home to Wolves on Boxing Day, and then Huddersfield, it basically our whole season does come down to these three games. And I think more probably, you know, you mentioned 1 point out of the four games after Southampton. I think most people can accept the results that have come out today. You know, the draw against Leicester, you know, we can sort of accept that. Losing 4-1 at Old Trafford, fair enough. But it's just the performance and the way that it's been going. You know, the first 10 minutes against West Ham, if we'd have put one of those chances away, everything would have been a lot better. But it's just the manner of the defeat, and the fact that the second goal against West Ham that we conceded just sort of seemed to suck the life out of our team, because we didn't really have anything in the second half. So it was just a case of, you know, has the feeling of empathy made its way from the stands to the players on the pitch? And are they just sort of right 2-0 down? There's no way we can get out of this now. Have they given up the fight the way that, you know, most of the fans have given up the fight?
Do you think Ranieri will be given funds in January? Because he's obviously working with, I guess, someone else's squad. Obviously, we can't forget that Fulham spent the best part of, I don't know, £100 million in the summer. So there might not be as much money there. But then again, you sort of have to ask yourself, are they going to go mental? Because it could be something that breaks the club, because, you know, it puts you in a real financial blight if you gamble and then get relegated after even more expenditure. So can you see any more names helping out Ranieri to sort of smoothen the transition between one manager to the next?
There are a couple of names out there that can make it difference, whether or not he's going to be giving them. Again, it does all come down to these three games. Say we lose the club probably do have a mindset of, right, if we're in a good position, these lot of players. If we're in a bad position, these lot of players. I can't imagine they're just being right, regardless of what's going on in January, we're going to go out and spend. I think, you know, on the Fulham Focus podcast, we've discussed how much money we've got left to spend. We seem to come to think that it's around the region of about 50 million plus, if you want to terminate loans and bring loans in, or however strategically that will work. So we reckon there's 50 million left to spend. Whether or not you want to buy, you know, two 25 million pound players, or if you want to buy five 10 million pound players, it's, yeah, it's going to be a confusing one. But as I've said, it's all going to come down to what state we're in come, you know, when Big Ben chimes 12 on the 1st of January, is going to hugely dictate how we attack the transfer window.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. And Cole, they were beaten by West Ham at the weekend in what has led to the Hammers winning 4 on the bounce. Now, a lot of people at the start of the season were saying that Manuel Pellegrini was the wrong man for the job. It certainly clicked. Why has it clicked?
Yeah, they just look settled now, don't they? I'm guessing, a bit like everything, you know, it takes a little bit of time to get your ideas across and your philosophy, and then you need players to buy into it. And I think it's one of them, you know, if players don't see results instantly, they may be a little bit more dubious. But it just looks like now they've got a bit more of a settled side. They've had a few players come back from injury. And maybe, you know, they have got some decent players in that squad. You know, Anderson looks like he's a good player. So, you know, maybe it's just now starting to click for them. The squad feels settled. You know, Pellegrini's getting those messages across that he wants to get across. And right now it looks good for them. So, you know, I won't say long may it continue. No. But, you know, right now that they're playing some good football and they're getting some good results, but I still probably feel that when they come across the kind of bigger sides and the better teams, I don't see them troubling them to be honest. But they may be one of those sides that are sort of sixth or seventh come the end of the season, because they may just be better than those below them. But yeah, at least it's good, because I was worried that Pellegrini was already looking like death when he went there. So, you know, a bad stint there could really have seen him off. So at least that's maybe helping him health-wise.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess those wins were all the more impressive when you consider that pretty much all their forwards are out injured at the moment. So Antonio led the line on Saturday. To be fair, did a decent job, got a goal. And talking of decent jobs, credit has to go to Southampton's attackers, as they certainly used their heads on Sunday. A trio of goals were scored with the noggin, as Ralph Hasenhüttl oversaw his first Premier League win as Southampton manager. Matthew, now the difference between that and the Mark Hughes era was almost like the change from night into day, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, everyone talks about the new, you know, the new manager bounce, and whether it's not, it's just a case of, you know, changing formation or anything. But the biggest factor that you could clearly see, mainly in his celebrations afterwards, is just the fact that there's a bit more energy about him. You know,
that's right.
it's not just a simple, right, we're going from 4-4-2 to 4-2-3-1, and player X is coming in, player X is coming out. And more than that, it showed that showed something that we don't have, and that's fight. You know, I mentioned it earlier, is the fact that this, you know, Hasenhüttl, I always forget. I will go to my grave not knowing how to pronounce that, or always getting confused. Just has that level of, you know, something we were probably looking for when Felix Magath came in. Just that German level of, you know, efficiency and drive that we are clearly lacking. So, and it, compared to the dour, sort of down, more serious levels of the Mark Hughes brought in.
Yeah, I guess you're absolutely right, really. I mean, if they can keep their strikers fit, Austin and Ings, you know, the two main forwards, they should be okay, because they've not been too bad. It's just the fact that for all their chances they're creating, they've been pretty woeful in the final third. So I think, like you say, just a bit more energy around the place might just be the thing that sees them, you know, keep their head above water. But they certainly made Arsenal look ordinary on Sunday, which from a Tottenham point of view was absolutely brilliant. But Cole, I guess as Spurs fans, we have to sort of begrudgingly say that they've certainly improved under Unai Emery. That's something we can't really argue. So even with that said, there's still one thing they need to work on, which was apparent on Sunday, and that's their defence, especially now with the amount of injuries and suspensions that they have on the horizon. So this sort of festive window, this period, could be a real tricky one for the Gunners, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think then the problem with Arsenal has always kind of been that leakiness, isn't it? And that kind of ability to crumble at the back. You know, they've never really had a problem as an attacking force in the league. You know, they've always had real good quality creative midfielders and strikers. So Arsenal have never had an issue up front. And with Lacazette and Aubameyang, then they've just reinforced that. You know, those two are two really good strikers. But I think we are seeing what most people probably knew, which is that, you know, Unai Emery will need a couple of windows to kind of maybe get themselves shut up at the back a little bit more and kind of reinforce that with a couple of real good quality centre-halves, you know, maybe another full-back to come in, and then just build and get them a little bit more solid. And I think that is what we're seeing. And the trouble they've got is that January's a notoriously bad window to try and get any real quality in, because you're looking at paying over the odds for that. So they may just have to try and get through now till the summer, because you don't really see that many great transfers go through in January unless you're prepared to be like Man City and splash out 100 million on one player to make a difference. And I don't see Arsenal doing that. So I think they had a long-term plan, which would be, you know, Emery would need a couple of seasons at least. And I still believe that will be the case. I think they're probably further along the journey than they thought they might be. Because they are looking a decent side at the moment. And yeah, if they can just solid themselves up at the back a little bit more, then, you know, they'll give the top four a run for their money. So, you know, they may struggle defensively till the end of the season, and that may be where some of the better sides get at them. But I think they'll be all right. And they'll probably look at fifth this year, fifth or sixth, and then in the summer, you know, bring in the sort of defenders they need. And then I think they really would have a chance of getting back in that top four and pushing the elite.
Carl, one name I have seen linked with Arsenal that could work in theory is Gary Cahill, because not getting much game time, if any, at Chelsea. I know Chelsea sort of loathe to let their senior players move to sort of their rivals, but out of sort of loyalty, they did it to Petr Cech. You know, thanks for all your service, go where you want. Could it be sort of a halfway house for Cahill, gets the minutes he needs, you know, and then out Arsenal fill their sort of gap as well? Can you see any legs in that?
I'm not so sure, because I don't think he'd come in and do a massively better job, if I'm honest, than what they've probably got at the moment. You could possibly say the thing with Cahill is he's a little bit more solid and he's possibly better than bringing in a young player. So he could do a very professional job, but I'm not sure I'd see that one go through, to be honest. I'm not sure really what Arsenal would gain from that long term. And obviously, yeah, maybe Chelsea won't want to do business with them, but they were happy to let Cech go. So maybe they'd be the same with Cahill, but I'm not sure I'd see that one coming off.
If it was a loan move, perhaps, that might work, but I don't know. I'm just plucking a name out of the sky, really.
Yeah, you might be right there. Yeah, I think that, you know, that would be a loan move, I guess, would probably really work for both sides, because, you know, Cahill gets to play some football, you know, Chelsea get him off their wage budget for, say, 6 months or so. And then, yeah, Arsenal bring in a player that, just for 6 months to the end of the season, could shore him up a little bit more. So that would be an interesting one. But if I was Arsenal, well, loan would be the only way I'd go for that player.
I think you're right. Okay, chaps, it's time to earn some money now, as we have to do our loser pool picks of the week. So, Matthew, I'll start with you first. There's 10 matches across Friday through to Sunday. Out of those, who is your guaranteed banker loser this weekend?
I'm going to pick a bit of an upset for me personally. Upset sort of thing. I think with all the chaos that's going on around this week, and I don't think they're going to get a decent manager in place in time, I'm going to put the loser pool. I guarantee you that Manchester United will lose at Cardiff City on Saturday night.
Wow, because this is interesting, actually, because do you know what? For the first time ever, I think there's going to be the same game but two different opinions, because I think Man United will win because the shackles are off, as they say, because I think they've got to do better. But then, at the same time, Matthew, you know, Cardiff, their fans, they are like a literal 12th man this season, aren't they? Because of the points that Cardiff have won, it's what, 14? And 13 of them have come at the Cardiff Stadium. So, the more I think about it, the more I'm doing myself a bit of a bother here. Because, I'm going to stick with Man United. So, one of us is going to be, well, unless it's a draw, I guess, but one of us might be wrong, which is a shock moment. Because usually it's sort of three different picks. So, we never had a sort of dueling clash. So, do you want to expand a bit more on why you think Cardiff will win? Is it just the maelstrom that's followed United over the last few days? The heads will be gone? Or can you see Cardiff actually grinding out a performance?
I think a little bit of both. I think all the talk is going to be... You know, mainly it's because of this whole thing with, you know, Michael Carrick's going to be taking the training for the next couple of days. I don't see a coach or anything in Michael Carrick. I don't see... Now, if this was an immediate short, you know, if this was an immediate big name appointment, like Zinedine Zidane has been touted a bit as well, and he'd have three solid days to get his ideas drilled in, then yes, I can maybe see it. But I just don't think there's going to be enough of a change in mentality in that sort of three to four day spell. Plus, is there anywhere you would, you know, big sides away aside, is there any of the sort of lower table teams that you would rather not be going than Cardiff City and a Neil Warnock side? Is there anywhere you'd rather not be going?
Actually, that is a very good point. I mean, it should make for a cracking clash. You know, it's going to be an interesting one anyway. But I think, you know, just this added subplot. For me, in my mindset, I'm thinking that United are going to be... It's like having a supply teacher, where it's like, yeah, we can have some fun this week. Do you know what I mean? Like, the boss isn't in, we can just sort of go for it. So, it will be interesting to see how it pans out. Like I say, one of us, unless it's a draw, will be wrong. Let's see who it is. But Cole, obviously, you could go for the draw, just confuse matters even more, but hopefully you've got another pick. So, for you, who is your guaranteed loser banker this week?
So I'm going to go for West Ham to lose at home to Watford.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, I think Watford are playing some good football, and we're really unlucky not to come away from Goodison the other week with the win. And the way they came back in that game was credit to them. And I actually think they're going to have too much for West Ham, and this will be one of them sides where just as West Ham start to think they've got the momentum going their way, you know, someone like Watford are going to come along and just upset them with Deeney and the players they've got like that. So for me, I think, you know, we'll see Watford beat West Ham this weekend.
Yeah, because I was reading the Evening Standard, like the London paper, if you're not from London, and I think it was Pedro Obiang was banging on about how they're looking for a record 5 wins in a row, or they haven't done it in years or something. So, you know, this is a big important...
It's kind of the omens, isn't it?
That's it, yeah.
The omens are there. They've just started thinking things have turned, and, you know, Europe could be on, you know, Europa League could be on the horizon. And then all of a sudden, bash, there you go. Home game against Watford that they'd probably feel now they should win. And then Watford just come along and burst the bubble and say, no, hold on a minute, it's not that simple.
Yeah, I think you make a very good case for it, actually. And I think, you know, Watford were very good against Cardiff. They took the foot off the pedal after going 3-0 up, but Watford are always a funny team. They sort of do have a habit of blowing hot and cold. You never quite know what you're going to get, but you're right, Carl, they are capable of turning on some really decent performances, and it's going to be an interesting tie. So I'll just recap. Carl's gone for West Ham to lose at home to Watford. I've gone for Cardiff to lose at home to Man United, and Matthew's gone for Man United to lose away at Cardiff. So, yeah, a real mixed bag. Usually it's sort of whoever Man City are playing, the loser, but I like the fact we've sort of gone a little bit left field. So good picks this week, lads. Let's see if they pay off. Where are we? Still quite a lot of admin to do, actually. A lot of fixtures that we haven't spoken about, and unfortunately we're not going to get to, otherwise it would be a 2-hour pod. So I'll spare you the details there, but just a quick bit of notes across the other games. Let's look at Huddersfield. They've scored just 10 goals this season, a damning statistic in itself, but when you consider that their joint top scorers are Aaron Moy and Zanka, the defender, it doesn't bode well at all. Newcastle were the team that beat them, and Rafa Benitez is continuing to work miracles on Tyneside. I mean, we see rumours that the club might be sold in, I guess, January, but again, you have to take them with a pinch of salt because we've heard that before. Bournemouth, they're a funny one. They've lost 6 of the last 7. There's no sort of crisis, but I mean, it's going to be a concern to Eddie Howe. At the same time, the team that beat them, Wolves, I mean, they had a spell where they picked up 1 point from 18, and now after 3 straight wins, they're 7th. So it just goes to show how important getting a run together in that middle tier of the Premier League really is. Man City beat Everton. We learned nothing new there, except they sort of bounced back from defeat. So, you know, business is back. Chelsea beat Brighton. Again, business as usual, but less said about their fans, the better. So, and I think that is about it. Yeah, Watford beat Cardiff. We've just pretty much done that one. Where are we also? No Tottenham versus Burnley chat you might have recognised, because that's been covered at length on my eSpurs podcast. So if you want a more in-depth look at that and what's happened at Spurs over the past 7 days, it's been a very busy week, notwithstanding all this Poch chat, so that won't be in it. But just about everything else, be sure to check that one out. And take a breath. Also, I need to thank my guests. It's been an excellent hour or so. Matthew, an absolute pleasure. I do hope you'll join me in the new year to do it all over again.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you want me on, you know I'm only a DM away. I'm a DM away.
Excellent news, my friend. We'll definitely do it again in 2019. And Cole, the same to you, mate. Always a pleasure chatting to you, and I hope you'll join me in the new year.
Definitely, Dan. It's been great. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks very much, buddy. In terms of recording schedules and dates, we usually do this on a Tuesday, so that's, what was it, Christmas Day, New Year's Day. There's absolutely no chance a podcast is going out on those days. Therefore, if I've got the time, I might try and just take stock of what's happened over the Christmas period, a quick half hour or something. So we'll see how we go. I probably won't promise a podcast, but I'll probably get bored and squeeze one out anyway. So just keep an eye out if it is one going live. So I just want to thank everyone who has listened to the show in 2018. I'm really enjoying recording these shows each week. I hope you enjoy the end product. A big thanks to my sponsors, Loserpool. Make sure you check them out at loserpool.com. We're 20 shows in now. It's gone so quickly. It feels like I've done 200. I'm looking forward to doing even more content in 2019. Also, more importantly, I need to thank anyone who's taken the time to be a guest on the show this year. There's always an open invitation to them, and of course, if you would like to get involved in the show, then just get in touch with me on Twitter, at DanTracy1983. Right then, it just leaves me to say that my name's Dan Tracy, this is The Real Football Cast, in association with Loserpool, and until next time, maybe even next year, goodbye.